You're about to hear my conversation with Liana Patch. She comes back to the show to talk through the story of how she reinvented her copywriting business. Let's get into it. Hey, here's my real-time-ish update for you, and I'm recording this one on May 6th, 2024. First, I just want to say that once and for all, the name of this podcast, I'm sticking with the name Open Threads. You may have noticed I had briefly renamed it there in early 2024. I was using the name Full Stack Founder. Well, long story short, I'm sunsetting that brand name and that website. It was a short-lived project that just didn't quite stick. So this podcast is back to its original name, Open Threads, from here on out. Okay, so as for my update, my main focus now continues to be instrumental products. That is my product studio where I partner with clients mainly on UI and UX work. And I specialize in designing modern interfaces for SaaS companies. And I deliver my designs in the form of coded HTML and Tailwind CSS templates and components. So that's the main service that I've been working with a couple of clients lately on, and it's something that I continue to really double down on the rest of this year. Other than that, I'm spending the rest of my time building out some new software products of my own to add to my small portfolio. My main SaaS product, Clarity Flow, continues to run smoothly with my small team, and we're always working on some improvements there. So that's my update for now. On to the show. So I'm about to roll my conversation with Liana Patch. We chatted on December 13th, 2023. And in this episode, Liana returns to the show and we walk through the story behind how Liana reinvented her copywriting business, actually multiple times. She went from being what she described as like kind of working with boring or typical copywriting and copy editing clients to moving into a more fun way of making a living as a copywriter, especially for Liana, who is a comedian and is so funny herself. So she reinvented herself as like a comedic copywriter. Then we even moved into what she's currently focused on, which is transitioning from productized consulting offers to actual products for copywriters and others. It's a fascinating conversation. I think you're going to enjoy it. Here it is. Here's my chat with Liana. Enjoy. So, Liana Patch, we're back on the show. Great to connect with you again.
Yeah, so happy to be here.
So, in the last one, we were talking about your interest in comedy and your history with that and all that. And then near the end of that episode, you were talking about how you left the freelance copywriting thing to go take a job for a couple of months at a company, and that didn't work. Like, it doesn't work for most of us who are like kind of unemployable in this industry. And you went back on your own. This was around 2015. And at that point you were going to do it your way. Let's hear the story from there. I want to hear about Punchline Copy and how your business has evolved through the years. Why don't we start at the beginning there? What were your first steps when you kind of went back on your own? Like, what was going to be different this time?
I was ready to do a complete rebranding because the business name that I had been working with was so boring. I don't even know where it came from. I started out as a copy editor. I've always been really good at that, catching typos, things like that. And so my business name was The English Maven.
Okay.
Which is just straight trash. And, you know,
started as an editor, not like a
yeah,
writer.
Yeah, I mean, I would write things here and there. I was a copywriter and a copy editor because I didn't know how to make money. And so I was doing everything. But yeah, I was doing a lot of publications editing by the time I got super burned out. I was a copy editor for like 5 different magazines and was doing some content editing too, like working with writers to shape pieces, all of which I was good at. But there was a moment or two when I was sitting at my desk and I realized I'm not breathing. Like, as I'm diving into this work, I'm holding my breath because I hate it so much. Mm. And that was a big wake up call for me.
Wow.
Yeah. So I knew I needed like a totally different approach. And here's the thing. You can change your brand. You can change your business name. You can change the clients that you're speaking to, but you will still keep a lot of your existing clients in the meantime.
Mm-hmm. There's a transition period.
Yeah. And there were two for me. I think it was April 2016, I relaunched as Punchline Copy and I kept a lot of my editing clients. It was just like, well, externally, I'm speaking to people who want funny copy, but I have to pay the bills.
Yep.
And I was doing some retainer work. And by November of that year, I was burned out on the retainer work, like two burnouts in a row. And I fired everybody and went to Bali for 2 weeks with a group called Hacker Paradise. I don't know, 2.5 weeks. Yeah. I was just like, what would the digital nomad lifestyle be like? Goodbye, boyfriend. Goodbye, cats.
Oh, you actually you intended on like moving around, like not just.
No, I was just going for a couple of weeks.
Okay. But
in retrospect, it was kind of rude of me to be like, please take care of my house.
Maybe for others listening who are maybe considering like a big change in focus, not just a rebrand, but like if someone's out there thinking like, you know, I need better clients or clients that I connect with on a more interesting level than the ones that I've been working with, you know, and you talk about this like transition period, you probably had all these network effects from your previous years, right? Like referrals, you know, previous clients recommending you to other clients who are more like them, but not like this new brand of clients that you're going after. How do you even think about starting to find like first clients again in this new focus for you?
And that was,
yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, go on.
Well, and just to be clear for folks listening, like would you call it like you're trying to focus more on like a comedic style of copywriting and clients who value that? Is that what you were going after?
Yeah, that was really hard for a long time because I had clients who personally I really liked who kept, you know, out of the generosity of their hearts, sending me referrals. And I had to be like, yeah, I don't really do that anymore. I don't want to do that. And I'm not going to do that. And then for a while I was doing that because I needed the money. But it took years for people to sort of get the message that I wasn't editing in particular anymore. I have in the past done a really useful exercise where I think about the clients that I most enjoyed working with, because there's so many facets of that. Like it's the person themselves, it's the scope of the project, and then like how many revisions are there? Like, did I have fun writing this? Mm-hmm. Was it something that I would want to do again or put on my website? There's so many ways to think about a good client, but I worked through like, what do my A+ clients look like? What do my B clients look like? You know, who's a C and below? Like, who should I just reject outright? Mm-hmm. And sometimes I get people who are technically a fit for me in the business, but I turn them away because I do not like their vibe personally. Mm-hmm. Like, and I don't say that, but it's just like,
I mean, it's not worth it. If it's not going to be at least not, it doesn't have to be like fun, but like, it should be like professionally like rewarding to work with someone. You know, you don't want to like tear
for me, it has to be fun. And like, that's different for everyone else, but that's one of the most important things to me is do I get along with the person that I'm working with? Do I like them? Because I can get excited about almost anything. I can write about almost, like if they're excited, I'm excited.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
sort of contagious. So I don't care what the product is. If you genuinely are working hard on it, it's something cool. Like it could be the most boring thing in the world. I love writing for boring products.
Yeah.
Boring. Yeah, nothing's boring. But then I'll have people who are like, I'm working on this DTC product and I know that's a perfect fit for you and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, but you kind of suck.
See, I was going to ask about products. So like, is there a certain type of product or industry or business type? I know you've done a lot of work with like SaaS, but like you do other stuff like e-commerce or other, like what's the range of different products that you tend to work with?
I would say like 95% of my clients are SaaS or e-commerce. And it's within that, it's mostly website copy, landing pages, and email flows. Mm-hmm. I'll do like more the R side of the pirate metrics funnel. Does anybody still say pirate metrics anymore? You know, like R.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm like an R retention revenue side of things.
Okay. Very cool.
Where?
And are you working with like brand new startups, like from idea stage going forward? Or like, we've been around a couple of years, we need to like rewrite and kind of dial in our voice.
That's such a good question because I am struggling to encapsulate. It goes back to that, like, who's the best client for me? Because I've worked with brands that have like, I don't know, $100 million in revenue, And I've worked with brands that have like 100K mm-hmm. a year. But it is nice if they've done a little bit of experimentation. And I also don't want to be somebody's last few thousand dollars in the bank, right? Mm-hmm. Like, don't pay for copy if you really can't afford it.
Yeah.
Get Joanna's books or courses and like learn to write it yourself.
You know, that's what I'm curious about, because I've sort of like hacked my way through writing my own copy for most things. A lot of it based on what I learned from Joanna's teachings mm-hmm. early on. And I've worked with you a couple times, and that's been fantastic. I'm curious to know your take on this. Like, what's the optimal way to work with or outsource the writing with a professional copywriter like you? Like, my thinking on it, please correct me if I'm wrong, is like, I think it's helpful if I write the first pass based on what I know, everything I know about the customers and the core pain point that or problem that we're trying to solve. Like, I'll write a version of the page, and then at least just to give that to you as like, here's what I came up with, but I know you can do so much better. Don't even literally like rewrite my sentences, but like I would just want you to see what my what my angle would be on it, and then where would you go from here?
I think that's great, because you know, I want to work with somebody who has done that work to understand their customers, who at the very least has done some customer research, even if they haven't turned it into a page. But it's nice to work with people who have like given it a try, and they're running into specific stumbling blocks that they can tell me about, or they can be like, I think we're having this problem. It's what I see in the survey responses, but I'm not sure. And I don't know where to put it on the page. Mm. And I can answer those questions better than just being like, okay, dump a bunch of customer research on me and it'll make a page hierarchy for you, which I can still do.
Right.
But it's nicer when it's like more specific questions.
Yeah. Do you ever get into the research phase part of it as well? Like, you know, you start working with a brand new client for you. You don't know much about the product or the problem they're solving. They don't really give you a lot of guidance. Like, do you get into doing customer interviews yourself or anything like that?
I have in the past. I don't so much anymore because I know so many people who are so good at it and specialize in that. But this comes back to like slicing and dicing perfect clients, right? If they haven't done any of that, then I probably shouldn't be working with them mm-hmm. at this point. I have settled at the spot where I say, here's a shared folder. Give me anything and everything you know, especially raw voice of customer. And then I will ask questions to fill in the blanks. Mm-hmm. And if I get enough answers and we can go forward with the copy, great. If not, I might refer you out for a research project or do the research project as like the first phase.
Got it.
Yeah.
Let's talk a bit more about like the structure of your business. Maybe how it's like changed or iterated over the years. I feel like you were probably one of the early, I don't know if you call it this, but like sort of like a productized consulting offer, like the way that you've like packaged up your offerings.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll start with today and go backwards, right? Like what's like the lineup of what you offer today? And maybe we could talk about how you got here.
Oh, it keeps changing. I right now really interested in making smaller, more fun products that don't require any service. You know,
I just subscribed to your $5 email.
Oh, God.
And I loved it. I mean, you know, it was so fascinating to me. First of all, and for those listening, you launched an email sequence, like an email course, which there are so many of those. They've been around for years, but they're usually free. You charged, I think I paid like $5 for it. Maybe I think you raised it to like 10 or 15 or something like that.
I didn't. No, it's still $5. We probably talked about this. Originally, it was going to be called Funnier in 15, and it was going to be $15 for 15 days of emails. And I wrote the series, and I was reading it, and I was like, this is way better than $15.
It was. So like, it absolutely was. I learned a lot. But I think it was in maybe the first email. There was a line that said, like, you paid $15 for this. And I was like,
I
didn't tell you about it because I thought that you were just planning on raising the price anyway or something like that.
No, I think I fixed it. That was left over from the 15. My ultimate goal, I think, I'm still playing with this, is to have like an upgrade option inside. I snipped it back to the like theoretical and sort of inspirational emails. And the other ones are a lot more like execution based. Mm-hmm. Like, here's how to do this thing. Here's how to write this funny thing. Here's how to take what we talked about in emails 1 through 5 and write funny. And basically it was sort of a walkthrough of my course. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's the price is at $15. This is like, and I love to give a lot, but it was like, this is going to be my course sales.
When I saw you launch that, first of all, I'm always interested in the work you're doing and just the topic of it, like write funnier copy. I was like, I would love to learn about that, but I'm just fascinated. And I think it's awesome that you launched a $5 product. Nobody is doing that in our industry anymore. Everyone's like, oh, you got to charge more. You got to charge hundreds. Yeah. This is worth so much more. But I think it's genius because it's like, I read every word of every email that you sent in that, nice. You know, because most email courses, you might read the first one and then you just ignore the rest of them because it's just another newsletter.
You paid for it.
Yeah, this is something I paid for.
Each email was a dollar of their money.
Yeah, absolutely. I put my credit card in and like that makes me pay attention to all five emails or whatever it was. And so, I mean, the open rate on that has got to be through the roof and it's got to be like...
Oh, I haven't even checked.
And it probably has this effect of like obviously it's not like for revenue, it's for engagement, I would think. It's like people getting subscribers to really hear about it, share it, retweet it, and then engage with the emails, open every single one. And then now they know you better, you know, that relationship over email continues.
Yeah. And if I were using a system that saved their credit card, I would then have their credit card. Not that I would do anything nefarious with it, but I think it's that whole like, you know, getting the first dollar is harder than getting the next 99
sure.
kind of thing that we have in SaaS. Like I'm going to pre-authorize your card for a dollar. Mm-hmm. You can cancel anytime. You've already paid. So you're sort of stuck in now. That was definitely the strategy I have been working with / inspired by a friend who built a digital template shop that she sold. And like, now she no longer needs to work. So she's coaching and mm-hmm. still making an insane amount of money. And she calls these small, like under $10 offers, overwhelm offers. And so it's like just a way to get people in the door. Like you've bought a $5 thing. Do you want to buy a $17 thing? What about a $97 thing? Mm-hmm. What about $147? So like I basically for years have just had hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars as ways to work with me, productized
right.
services. And this year, I've just sort of been like filling out that lower part of the ladder and being like, at scale, maybe this would be an interesting source of revenue.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, real quick, this podcast is sponsored by Instrumental Products. That's my product studio where I and my small crew, we take new product ideas from concept to launched. I'm a full stack product designer and developer. And I love collaborating with fellow founders, creators, and SaaS companies to bring that spark of energy into new product ideas. Think of Instrumental Products as your shortcut to shipping that next idea and getting it into the hands of your customers as efficiently as possible. Got something to ship? Let's talk. Visit instrumentalproducts.com to learn more. All right, so we can get into like the actual product stuff that like this email course that you're talking about. But let's talk about your productized consulting offers that you've had. I think you had one called like the Uppercut and like it's always been really interesting how you actually package them and deliver them with like, all right, this day on the calendar is your day. And
yeah.
And like, so how do you kind of think about all that stuff?
Yeah, I started with the Buy My Day, right? So VIP days, I think, are super common now. Mm-hmm. They weren't as common when I was starting to do them, but I definitely didn't invent them. But it was, for me, it was like, man, I'm super prolific and like can get a surprising amount done in a day. And I love the idea of not having projects overlap because yep. people don't get back to you and then the invoice and whatever. And it's like, pay me up front. This is your day. We'll figure out what I'm going to do during the day. And then it's over.
It gets the client then, prepared to like, they got to get their stuff together by the 20th of December, whatever. And
they do. I sort of, it's a pretty informal process. I do have some emails. I should check on those. Like those are going out, but they're triggered by certain steps. And sometimes mm-hmm. people skip the steps and don't get the emails, which is annoying. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's basically like, here's your shared folder. Anything you think would be helpful, let's look at that. I used to say, let's hop on a call at the beginning of the day. Now, if it's a first-time client, we'll do a call a couple weeks in advance.
Right.
And so they know exactly what I'm going to be working on the day of.
And then how do you deal with like actually delivering the the day? Like, are you in touch throughout the day? And then there's like a final delivery at the end. And how do you deal with like, I don't know, like revisions or questions after the day?
Yeah, usually I just check in at the beginning of the day and say like, hey, just as a reminder, here's what I'm working on today. You'll hear from me in the afternoon. If you don't hear from me until the evening, it's because I took a walk and I'm going to come back and edit real quick. And then we have a week for any revision requests. So they have a week to get to look at the copy and add comments or hop on a call or make me a loom, whatever works best. And then I have another week to turn around revisions. Mm-hmm. So within 2 weeks of the day, they have finished copy.
Nice. Nice. So what else in your lineup of like service offerings are like kind of popular with your clients?
Well, I have the Uppercut, which is basically the landing page rewrite service. It's an audit and a rewrite. I'm like messing around with pricing because sometimes I can do like 3 uppercuts in a day and like probably should not.
And that one is like totally asynchronous, right? Like you're not doing a live call or consultation. No. It's like, send me this thing. I'll do some rewriting. I'll send you like a quick loom back and then.
Exactly. Although sometimes like a lot of my product as service orders come from having a call first. And I do a little bit of vetting, but it's like, yeah, I'll hop on a call for 30 minutes and talk about your business. And if you like how I think about this stuff, then I can write for you.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I've got some audit productized services. One is 4 pages of a site. And I chunked out a 10-minute piece of that and, you know, started selling that for $150. And that's done pretty well. Because sometimes you just want 10 minutes of feedback on one page of your site.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. How about like larger projects? Like we want you on board for like a month or for a 3-month project. Like, are you doing anything huge like that with clients?
I have. I had a client buy 3 months, which was cool. This was a year or two ago. I have one retainer spot that I keep open until the right person comes along, until the right company comes along.
You can be like super selective with that.
Yeah. Cause I don't want to work that hard. Like, I work hard, but I'm trying to make time for my own business, you know?
Of course.
And I want to make sure that I'm delivering the best work.
Yeah.
And I haven't talked about this with you, but I've talked about this with my coach and some other friends. As I'm getting older, my capacity for like grinding is diminishing. And so I'm trying to build in.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. I'm like, oh man, I used to be able to write for like 10 hours a day. Was what I was writing very good? Probably not. Mm-hmm.
So
now I write better stuff, but I can't go for as long.
So we're recording this in December of 2023. This will come out in 2024.
Yeah.
What's on your plate for this year? Like, what kind of changes are you making? We talked about that email course that came out a couple of weeks ago, the $5 email course. What else are you thinking? Like structurally, like what do you want to get into? What's going to be new or different? Or what are you killing off? What are you ending?
I don't think I'm ending anything. I am introducing a lot of new stuff. I'm going to start selling this exhaustive list of humor writing formats that I've been working on with my friend Alex Baia, who has like been published in the New Yorker 20 times and runs a humor blog called Slackjaw. We've been collaborating on this thing. So that's going to be another like probably 17-ish bucks, maybe 27. We're not sure yet. Just a huge Google Doc.
So a collection of like formulas for pieces that like what is that?
Yeah. So great question. It's like monologues and different types of monologues and examples of each of those monologues. They're all written humor format pieces. So like McSweeney's, Reductress, The Onion, Clickhole, Hard Times, things like that. But all the formats that you would see a headline written in, or, you know, headline is a format, like letters, dialogues, screenplays, any possible way to put a frame around a funny concept, which is where so many people get stuck. And one of the things that I try to teach, it's like when you're looking for ideas, go improv, blue sky, go wide. But when you're trying to write, like put a little metaphor or frame or filter around it so that you have creative limitations.
Yeah. So you mean like kind of like setting constraints, like whatever we come up here, it has to sort of check these boxes.
Yeah. Or like if you're sitting there and you're like, oh, I have this funny idea, but I don't know if it'd be better as like a letter to the editor or like a text conversation, you know, or a series of yard signs, you can just scroll through this list and be like, oh, that's funny. Oh, I could do it that way. So kind of inspiration.
Oh, I like that. That's,
yeah.
And it's interesting. I'm just right now starting to get into, like, I'm planning on doing a lot more YouTube content next year.
Nice. Yeah.
And right now I'm like learning a lot about what it means to create YouTube content. And like so much of it is packaging the concept for a video, like in the thumbnail and the title and
hook. Yeah.
And yeah, like the hook and everything. And I guess it's all about sort of like looking at other channels, maybe from completely different spaces, different industries, and sort of see like it, taking one idea, but like trying it in like 10 different title variations or 10 different variations. Interesting.
Yeah. I'm like saving Instagram reels that I think are cool or that I could, you know, reasonably ape in my own industry. I'm doing the same kind of like swipe file stuff.
Nice. Okay.
And so, I also.
Yeah.
What, oh, sorry.
I was going to say like, so we've got a $5 email course. We've got a $17, like templates collection thing that you're just describing. Yes. Let's go up the ladder. Where are we going from here?
My own swipe file, which is called Comedypedia, and it is an Airtable that you can search and sort by types of copy and type of humor. So like I want a funny email opt-in that's sort of wholesome and goofy, and you can sort to find those. Or like I want unsubscribe copy that is really dark and morbid, or a landing page that is lowbrow and crass. I'm going to start selling that.
And this is your swipe file, your Airtable that you've been like collecting for like how many years? Like,
not that many years because I was just using my hard drive, but I started putting them. I think I've got somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 examples right now. Wow. So not every like slice and dice is going to have like a whole bunch of examples, if any, but I'm going to keep adding to it. And so part of the reason to launch it is to light that fire under myself to like systematically add to it. Because I add like 5 examples a week, maybe.
So it sounds somewhere. Like you're making the transition that most people start to make is like, let's get away from selling my time through these consulting things. Let's get into products. Is that like your general goal? General
I think
direction?
So. Or just to say like, wouldn't it be nice to build this passive, you know, quote unquote passive revenue? Because I've never really tried that. I've just traded time for money. And if I can make things that people actually find useful and novel, why shouldn't I do that?
Yep. Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and it makes so much sense to do it, but I guess the other thing that goes along with this transition is you get away from the done for you, which is like clients who they're not even trying to be professional copywriters themselves. They're hiring someone like you, to selling products to other professional copywriters or maybe aspiring professional copywriters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, I think I feel like it's the way to transition it that makes the most sense. Cause like, I think a lot of people have tried to do the thing where it's like, okay, I've been serving these kind of clients in a service capacity. Now let's create a course that people like those clients could take to do it themselves. But I think at the end of the day, most of those clients don't want to take a course. They want to hire someone, you know?
I don't know. Some of the other stuff that I'm exploring adding is like fractional CMO offerings for SaaS companies. Cause the feedback that I've been getting is like, I wish I could just have 5 hours a week of your time or your brain.
Yep.
And that appeals to the strategy side of my brain, which is like, great. Cause I don't have the stamina to write, you know, 20 hours a week for a single client.
You know, as we talk here again, we're in December, 2023 here. And I'm also experimenting with sort of similar things as like you know, this term like fractional this, fractional that. I'm playing around with like fractional product strategists or product manager for other software companies.
Wow.
And I have a couple of these like early clients who I'm working with like this, and most of it is async. And like in one case, it's like we need to, they're an established SaaS company. We're building out some big new feature. I'm going to go in and work with them to just plan it out, roadmap it, spec it out, and then I mean, I'm also kind of learning, like, how does this fractional thing sort of make sense for them? How does it make sense for me? What kind of clients are ideal for this? What's not a great fit? And it's an interesting, I feel like that term fractional is almost like the new productized consulting, you know?
I think it is. And I actually kind of resisted it. I really wanted to call this offer marketing co-founder as a service. And a resounding quorum of bootstrapped SaaS owners were like, no, call it fractional CMO.
Huh, interesting.
Like, all right, fine.
I, you know, because I feel like it matches up so well with how so many companies, at least in our industry, think about hiring. You know, like I almost, first of all, like someone like as talented as you or other people in our industry, like it wouldn't ever make sense to like hire at full time for like a full time annual salary, right? Like A, you wouldn't be available for that sort of thing. B, I wouldn't be able to afford it. But the idea of getting like your expertise or you know, like on a fractional level, like that's how I've always hired people, you know, is like work with some of the best people, but just for a project or just for a couple hours here, a couple hours there, and you still get the benefit and they're still doing their thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on the same page. I think project scopes are just so much easier and more contained and contribute more to excellence, like better outcomes than retainer stuff, which often, this is the reason I don't really have retainer projects anymore. I was upset with myself for like delivering okay work, delivering fine work, but not like transcendent, one-off, exciting stuff that, you know, hopefully I'm still capable of.
Your site is punchlinecopy.com. We'll get everything linked up. Nice. And I'm really excited to see all this new stuff that you're rolling out in 2024.
Thank you.
It should be fun to watch.
Yeah, thank you so much for these great questions. I love talking about myself.
Oh, always fun. Thanks, Liana. Yep.
That does it for today's episode of Open Threads. What'd you think? Let me know on Twitter or X. I'm at CastJam. And you can find the full videos for all episodes of Open Threads on the YouTube channel for this podcast. That's youtube.com/openthreads. One more thing. I'd really appreciate if you'd give this podcast a 5-star review on iTunes. That helps a lot. Thanks for listening. I'll see you on the next one.